Cable TV customers desperate for CBS shows can now put away the backup rabbit ears antenna.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio. After a negotiation that involved everything short of biting and scratching, CBS and Time Warner Cable have reached a deal, which means a CBS blackout for 3 million cable customers has ended. Joining me live is Marketplace's Adrian Hill. Adrian, what do we know about this agreement?
Well, we don't know a ton. Both sides are keeping pretty quiet about the specifics right now. Now, if you remember, the issue here is that CBS wanted more money from Time Warner for its programming. Time Warner didn't want to pay it. If you read between the lines today, it does sound like CBS came out on top. Reportedly, the head of CBS sent a note to employees saying, quote, "We are receiving fair compensation for CBS content." And in a statement, the head of Time Warner says, "We certainly didn't get everything we wanted."
All right. And I'm aware there are no real winners here except those who maybe read a book this summer instead
and
of watching
good for
CBS.
Those people.
Right, indeed. But the blackout went on for about a month here. Why settle now?
Well, you know, I'm actually one of these Time Warner customers who had to live life without CBS for a month. And that basically meant missing Under the Dome and, you know, some reruns. It wasn't a big deal. But we've got professional football season starting. The NFL kicks off on Thursday. And there was just a sense that too many people in these really big markets would get really angry to miss so much football. You know, also, NFL games equal big ad revenue that no one wanted to miss out on.
All right. Marketplace's Adrian Hill. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Now, Microsoft is buying Nokia, the cell phone maker that was popular in high school for people who are 20-something now. $7.2 billion Microsoft is paying. In Nokia's homeland, Finland, the news is being greeted with the same lack of enthusiasm that the British expressed when Cadbury's candy was bought by Kraft 3 years ago. Imagine, if you will, if a Finnish company ever were to buy Chevrolet from GM. Microsoft gets a cell phone manufacturer to help it compete with iPhones and Galaxies. It also gets Nokia's clever CEO, who used to work at Microsoft. That's especially relevant now that Microsoft CEO Steve Ballmer has announced he's leaving. Now let's check in with the numbers. Stock index futures in the U.S. are up sharply this morning after a big rally in European and Asia on our Monday holiday, but the FT 100 index in London right now is currently down a 0.1%. Japan's Nikkei rose 3% overnight. Today, what was once the greatest name in photography since Alfred Stieglitz is set to emerge from bankruptcy. Moving forward, Kodak will have a very different focus. Sarah McCammon looks at the company's future.
This isn't a tough question, right? What does Kodak make?
Film and
cameras.
I have a little camera. It's a Kodak, and I've had it ever since I was a little girl.
How old are you now, may I ask?
81.
That's Donna Crawford, and before her, Chuck Merritt and Patty Audison in Des Moines, Iowa. You probably think of cameras, too, but that's Kodak's past. The future? Commercial printing.
Think about a bottle of juice or a yogurt cup or something.
George Conboy is chairman of Brighton Securities in Rochester, New York. He says Kodak will survive not by putting pictures on film, but by printing images on all sorts of products and packages. It also means the days of Kodak as a giant international company are over, says industry consultant Dave Zwang.
They're going to have to be like pretty much every other company now. Nimble, agile, and be willing to turn on a dime and support the new requirements and demands of the market.
That means shifting to a leaner company, fighting for their share of a crowded industry. I'm Sarah McCammon for Marketplace. Marketplace Morning Report is supported by CIT. For over 100 years, CIT has provided lending, leasing, and advisory services to small and middle market businesses. More at CIT.com. And by Join Me, an instant online meeting app used by millions of people to collaborate and get work done anywhere. More at Join.me.
Parmesan cheese you want from Italy, champagne better be France, smartphone components and just about everything else, China. But what about wine from China? BBC reporter Celia Haddon in Beijing has been doing some tippling in the name of journalism. Hello, Celia.
Good morning.
So tell me about the thirst for wine in China.
Well, wine is still seen by many average Chinese people as a bit of a novelty. It's something that's drunk at weddings and is given as gifts in very elaborate gift boxes. But that interest in wine is growing. French wine still dominates the market, but that seems to also be changing. There's a lot of interest in New World wines from the United States and Australia. And also there's a growing, if not small appreciation for domestic Chinese wine.
I'm particularly interested in local production. So there is a burgeoning local industry.
There actually are three massive Chinese wineries that produce a lot of wine domestically in China. Great Wall is one of these wineries. Dynasty Wine is another. The bulk of wine that's sold in China is Chinese wine.
Now, here's the important question, Celia. Have you tasted?
Well, I've lived in China for quite a few years, so I've tasted wine, particularly at weddings. But I did have the opportunity to enjoy a more formal wine tasting with Jim Boyce. He's a Chinese wine blogger, and he presented me with a bottle from Silver Heights, which is this boutique winery, and then also two kind of lower-end, more mainstream wines in China. The cheaper ones really didn't taste very good, and the more expensive ones, I've got to say, they were quite good.
You think folks in the U.S. and North America or Europe will ever get to taste Chinese-produced wine?
Well, interestingly, there's a huge shortage of quality wine grapes in China. So actually, domestic demand for wine in China seems to be outstripping supply at the moment. Especially the high-end boutique wineries simply can't keep up with the demand.
So Americans will get to use Chinese computers, Chinese toys, Chinese just about everything else, but maybe not wine, at least the medium run. That's so interesting.
I think the Chinese are going to want to keep the wine for themselves, though they're willing to sell the other products, but the wine will stay in China.
The BBC's Celia Hatton in Beijing, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And if you're thinking it's just a little early in the morning for wine, need I point out that with China, one big time zone where it's always past 5 p.m. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
Time is money, but it turns out lacking in either can trigger a physical response.
More than just a metaphor, there's actually something primitive that happens to the human brain when experiencing very little.
I'm David Gura, the economics of scarcity, from your bottom line to your day-to-day activity list. Next time on Marketplace from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.